Welcome back to the Access to Education podcast, where we talk about all things having to do with learning disabilities and learning challenges. Families can be hard, the dynamics between parents and siblings, aunts and uncles, grandparents and beyond. Then when you add in a separation or divorce, this often creates more uncertainty in a family. Now add all that and a child who is neurodiverse, and not everyone is on board with the idea of there being an issue. Well, it's a sure recipe for tension and struggle. On the show with me today is Danielle. She is a mother of four boys, a unique family setup, and a child diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Danielle has navigated many ups and downs with her family. Today, she's going to share some of the lessons she has learned, and I hope that her story might help you navigate what can sometimes be a difficult time. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm excited for us to have this conversation because it's such a different perspective from what I've talked about up to this point. And I think the one snippet that I hope we can kind of dig into a little bit, there, I guess there's two bits really, is the differing of opinions with families as to whether or not there is a thing, but then also, you know, bringing other families together and kind of blending your family with another family that can be challenging for lots of different reasons. So I'm excited for this conversation tonight.
Me too.
So let's, I mean, again, I gave a little bit of information about you just now, but I can't do your whole story justice. So can you share a little bit about your family, the ups and downs, kind of how it's all gone?
Absolutely. So I like to think of myself as a little Mary Poppins in real life. I'm a blended family of, gosh, four boys across the board. And they range, let me tell you, they range from newborn, like 22 months old to almost 16 now. My oldest is 16. So my eldest son is also on spectrum disorder. He's on the spectrum, however you want to word that, and according to what you're comfortable with, but we say the spectrum, and that's what we refer to it as. And then we have a second teenager, an 11-year-old. And so we're across the board. We're in the season of teenage years as we speak. So there's a lot of hormonal things that are happening in and around the space. At any given point in time, there is some sort of quintessential meltdown or some sort of mom, help me fix it. So I definitely do a lot of fixing in this time space right now, but I consider, you know, myself and my husband, who's sometimes our biggest kid, we just navigate life one day at a time together.
I think sometimes when you have that much going on, I think it really literally is, I just need to make it through this day. And depending on the day, sometimes it's this hour, this minute, right? Like, I think it very much depends on the moment and the season that you're in. So I think that's a really good thing to remember, is that sometimes it's just moment to moment, right? No, and I wonder too, like, do we sometimes try to rush things too much as parents?
I really came across this interesting conversation with my oldest, and it was something that had already kind of glossed over in my head. Like, I'd lived through that moment. We've had this phrase that we kind of, maybe in our Southern vernacular, that we talk about in general, saying that things are, you're a little bit of a late bloomer. And this phrase has been used to describe the longevity of how fast or how slow we're expected, quote unquote, to do things. And in the early years, when I had my son at a very young age, let me just say that out loud, I was 21. I was just starting life. You know, it was very much a kid, almost raising a kid. And I had to grow and mature very fast in that time frame. And when I did, that phrase late bloomer was so casually used all the time. And I stopped kind of getting away from that per se. Didn't even dawn on me that, you know, it was a form of conditioning, that phrase. And so I look back at it now, and now other things are happening in and around that particular blended family circle, more life transitions, other parents getting married, things along those lines. So as that's happening, this phrase came back out of nowhere. Oh, you know, they're just late bloomers. And my oldest took the biggest offense to the fact that how can you dictate someone else's growth based upon the expectancy of a broken society? How? Mom, wow. I don't understand. And it made me stop in my tracks, literally just turn around and be like, you know what? Oh my goodness. He's absolutely right. I need to reprogram, reassess the language that I have been taught. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting to, and now I'm like thinking in my head, like, yeah, I erased that so long ago, like control alt delete, like it was, it's gone. But I think it's very interesting that I could hear that perspective from someone I actually put in that particular category at one point in my life.
Yeah.
And now I can just better appreciate that we do things when it's our season. When it's our season, it's our season.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's just a little lesson that.
That's a really profound thing for him to say.
It is.
To say, don't put me in that box.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which exactly. I think is so much about what I'm trying to do is that we don't have to put our kids in boxes.
Right.
That they really can sort of do the thing, mm-hmm. but maybe they don't do it when everybody else does it, but they're going to do the thing.
Yes.
So don't pigeon them. Don't say they can't do it. They're just not ready yet. And why do they need to be ready?
Yes. Oh my goodness. That's what speaks eons to me through this whole process of being a parent of a special needs child, of a child on spectrum. Like, what does that look like? What does that sound like? So it's really important for me to live into the words that I want to live into and set those bars for not only myself, but my children who are not on spectrum, being more appreciative and embracing of different people with different mindsets, with different tones and different expectations of life that teaches them on a much deeper level to appreciate people as they are.
So this is a really good segue into my next question for you.
Yeah.
Listen, families are tricky sometimes.
Yes.
Right? So they can sometimes be tricky. Families don't always, extended family, because they don't see the inner workings of the immediate family, mm-hmm. their opinion on what is or isn't happening mm-hmm. can be hard. So yes. not having family always see that maybe there is a neurodiversity going on, or maybe there is a learning disability, or autism actually is present or something. Mm-hmm. What was the hardest part for you? Like, how did that go? Did everybody acknowledge that it was a thing? Did you have some people saying, oh, it's absolutely not, and some saying it was? Like, how was that for you?
I think it's really interesting that the way that I perceive things, obviously, because I'm boots on the ground, I'm with my son every step of the way, when he's upset on a daily basis, when he's happy on a daily basis, when he's not happy on a daily basis, he's kind of moody, right? All those day-to-day things are things that I am positively sharing with them, with other people outside of our bubble. However, they interpret that differently. It's still very much a watered down, everybody experiences that, you know, that's normal for anyone. You know, that is the kind of feedback that I receive when I share some of those day-to-day experiences. It's almost as if I am so inexperienced that I don't know better to know the difference between what is happening and what is quote unquote expected to happen. And I understand that comes with some longevity of parental practice, sure. But there's a huge part of that where every child is different. Their makeup is different. What happened in your generation is going to be different than what happens with my generation, what happens with my kids' generation. So while, yes, there's some certain milestones, you know, walking and talking and playing, and there's certain milestones that, you know, are. But on the other level, the other side of that is embracing the fact that there is a little bit of difference. And there, and it's okay for that to be as well. There's still a lot of struggle with accepting of some of that on our side, unfortunately.
And I think something that I have talked about on the podcast before, and I've certainly talked with my clients when they're sort of going through the early stages of understanding a diagnosis, is that parental gut check mm-hmm. of like, oh, this doesn't feel like everything else. And when you're that parent at the play date and you're watching your child play with another child and you're thinking that doesn't feel right, or it doesn't mm-hmm. look right, or it doesn't seem like everybody else, or when you are at the play date, you're that parent that's kind of having to lead the child to play more, or to help when like they don't necessarily, those are all the things that maybe the people outside of the bubble don't see, and they're not sensing it. So it's so important, I think, for parents who are listening to this today to really kind of focus in on them, their gut, their feel. And you're right. I think some of it, when we look at it from our outside, the outside people who are outside of our bubble. Mm-hmm. We say, oh, it's just a normal thing, or it's just this, or it's just that, but they don't live the day-to-day. I love your term of like boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. They aren't there from wake up to finally, if they ever do, fall mm-hmm. asleep. You know, they're not watching that pattern daily. They're not hearing from the teacher every day. They're not hearing yeah. from, right? Like mm-hmm. that's impactful as a parent when you're constantly getting those phone calls.
We're actually in a knee deep in a kind of situation where my son is, he's doing well in school. However, there's just some general things that just come along with being an autistic child that is just kind of, you know, naturally there. There's a little bit of, you know, there's delays in things. There is not as many assignments being turned in on time. His missing assignment number is kind of going up this year. And unfortunately, where I'm here with him on a daily basis, you know, reminding him and doing the things, telling him constantly to stay on top of your studies, things along those lines, the other co-parent, his father, is really struggling with understanding why, you know, why am I not staying on top of him? Why am I not doing more for this child? And on the outside looking in, sure, the numbers don't match the amount of intellect and wonderful knowledge that this child contains. But there is one, you know, that element of spectrum that we're not taking into consideration when we're just saying this is just a child who just needs, he's being lazy, or he's just not being competent enough. If I was there, then maybe I could, you know, that sort of feel. And it's very hard to explain to the other parent who's not been as boots on the ground, who doesn't see that day-to-day routine, the amount of actual effort that the child is actually putting into said studies.
That's another one of those examples of, well, it's the age. They don't mm-hmm. turn in assignments. It's normal for him to not turn in assignments,
yes.
right?
Yes.
But it sounds, and listen, I don't know your son, but it certainly sounds to me like he's a very smart, very bright boy who has lots of information to share. The struggle is getting it from in that big, beautiful brain of his into whatever form the assignment needs to be in. But exactly. then not only get it onto the paper, but then actually take that physical documentation mm-hmm. and say to the teacher, here is my work, right? So there's mm-hmm. two steps.
Yes.
That are really hard for some kids. One of those steps yeah. might be really easy. Both could be really difficult, mm-hmm. but either way, you're dealing with a teenager, right? Who already is yes. like, why do I need to do this assignment? How is this going to change my life? Why do I need to know this? Right.
Yeah,
how does this affect me later in life? Right.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to be a philosopher. He wants to be this, you know, this amazing, maybe a psychologist, yes. maybe, okay. He talks about these wonderful aspiring ideas. And then we kind of go back a little bit and do that homework. Okay. To be a philosopher, you need to have this type of degree. In order to get that degree, there's these areas of studies that you must focus on. He's totally into mythology. He wants to be in mythological studies. There we go. Mm. And that's just another area where we can help support that, but without necessarily pushing him over the cliff of stressing him out to the point where he doesn't, you know what I mean? And I think there's just realistic viewpoints from both sides of parenting, co-parenting, blended families that we can support. Now, my personal stance is I don't care if you mop floors for a living or if you're creating the next scientific discovery. I want you to be a good person mm-hmm. in the world. I am more excited about the idea of my child knowing what he needs to do to be the next academic person, but I am more concerned about him actually just wanting to appreciate nature, wanting to appreciate community, which is a real struggle a lot with various types of teenagers on spectrum. So the fact that our parenting values can sometimes vary doesn't mean that there's not common ground there and you can still, you know, compromise in some areas in regards to how you want to raise your child.
So blended families can be difficult to come together on a good day. I do not have personal experience with it, but when we look at blending families and bringing families together and we look at your current partner and then you bring in, you know, your autistic son who then has to kind of, and again, I don't know him personally, so I don't know kind of where his parameters are and where his comfort levels are.
Sure.
But I think when we think generally of autistic people, you know, we think of, you know, they have very set mindset on like how things are going to go. They're used to their way of life. Mm-hmm. And then you say to him, okay, so mommy's met this new person and he or she are going to come into our life. How did that go over with your partner, with your son? Did your partner bring in new children that then like brings a whole other element? And I know you have a tiny one. So that's like a whole, so how did you, I think, walk through that? Mm-hmm. And how did that season, if we're going to talk about kind of putting our life into seasons, how did that season go over? Because I know for my kiddo, and he's, you know, the anxiety when we change things, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of setup, there's a lot of prep. Like, yes. Talk to me a little bit about how you blended the families and how the partner kind of, the new partner kind of deals with, and how was that for them, and how, because that would have been a whole other thing to take on.
It was. And the funny thing is that we were older. And so I mentioned, like, I had my oldest son when I was 21, and I didn't meet my partner until I was well into 28. And so it was one of those situations where I had matured a lot since the time that I had my first child and the time that I had my second. And then also on top of that, my beloved partner also was kind of embracing his nephew, which eventually became our partner, player number three, before we had player number four. And so there's a large gap between some of these age groups. I mean, there's a 12-year gap between embracing children from all backgrounds too. And let me just preface that with, my children are not all the same ethnicity. So I want to make sure I make that very clear. It's for some people that's, you know, oh, okay, great. You have kids from different backgrounds, but it's also like a matter of like honoring all of the kids and all of their cultures and all of their heritages as well. So my husband knew that he wanted children. He didn't have children at the time. He knew he wanted children. And so when I came along, and I wasn't prepared for that whatsoever, it was just really a stumble, to be honest. And then he was like, gotcha. It was very, very cool that the way my kids were young. So my oldest son at the time was like 4. And so because it happened so young in their lives, it was just a natural acclimation. So, you know, we went from, hey, let's play blocks together. My husband and my oldest son, there's still a very old picture of them when they were just meeting each other. And for my second son at the time, just one, he was a little under one actually when they first met. And so he was able to play at the park with them. But Miles, my oldest, he was so into wanting to play blocks and put things together and create little play toys and things like that with him. And I felt like that was a good building block for the two of them to kind of naturally gravitate toward each other. And over time, year after year, until we were married, that's how it was. They just kind of created this little cool, neat bond. At the time, my oldest father was not as engaged with him. So it really almost kind of was like a swap at one point. And then eventually, as he started to be more, his father became more active in his life, my partner was able to still kind of keep up with him with school and awards and, you know, all those type of fun activities. But I always tried my very best to keep everybody celebrating in the same space. And that's still a very big family rule that we have today. We have kids from multitudes of different families, but we always invite them for birthdays, major holidays that we jointly celebrate, things along those lines, because I really wanted that message of this child is loved by so many different people. So that blended family aspect was a little bit, for me, it was great. It was like, yes, turn the fire up. This is exactly what this child needs. And then from all my other children's aspects as well. And then a couple of years later, we added one more child to the mix, and that was player number three, Michael. He was originally our nephew that we adopted, and that helped bring this whole new element into play. And we also got to see my oldest son, who's on spectrum, really interact with someone close to his age. He didn't have that before. Before we were the father's family, it was kind of a polar, if you will. They only had one child, and there was not any additional kind of cousins, things along those lines, to kind of necessarily be as around Miles. They were there. They were present. But I feel like on a day-to-day basis, he was flying solo for a while until my second youngest. And then our adopted nephew came into play. And so it was really interesting to see how this dynamic went very quickly from it's my world of Legos and whatever I want to do to now I have to share and navigate and play with other people. So that was a little bit different. That dynamic was really, really like a little bit of an adjustment period. Little did we know, he was very quiet in the very beginning and we didn't know how to take that, but there was definitely some anxiety building from that, which we later kind of discovered as he got older. But I definitely, in the beginning, he just kind of seemed to fall in line with everything. He wanted to be the leader, of course, because he was the oldest. So there was that. But as he got older, he really just kind of formed into this really kind of leadership kind of person. And to this very day, when you hear his voice, it's like a commanding voice. You don't expect a teenager to sound that way, but he does. And so I think it's very profound that over the years, he's been able to really just blossom in that way.
How was it for your partner? And this is maybe an unfair question because I'm asking you to give me a thought or opinion on his thoughts. So probably not entirely fair, but I'm going to ask the question anyway.
Okay.
How was it for you to explain to your partner, and how do you think your partner felt kind of trying to understand your eldest and his differences and difficulties? Because, you know, it sounds to me like, oh, they just sat down and played blocks together, but I'm sure there were moments that were not that easy because he may not have wanted the block to be placed quite that way, or, you know, no, those are the wrong color, or, you know, or this is, you're sitting in the wrong spot, right? Like, so this, how did your partner handle that? Because that's a whole, like, it's different when I think it's different when you start with that child from an infant and you start to learn their syncrasies that they need, their things that they, and you can kind of, you know, you can play the Tetris game of like, well, I kind of want them to go this way, so I'm gonna, but when you're new on the scene and you haven't had them since they were little, how did that go?
Okay, so there's a really good story that comes from this. It's actually the first time that my partner, Kevin, made peanut butter and jelly. So back in the day, mom made traditional peanut butter and jelly, PB&J, with a knife. And so when my husband, future husband, walked through the picture, he started making peanut butter and jelly with a spoon. Miles would not touch said sandwich. I mean, it would just, it's not the same. And he kind of would throw this little bit of a fit, like, you can't make me eat this because, you know, it's not made right. So he already had, like you said, the sequences in his head. He already had those built into his system. And if it's outside of this line, then it doesn't fly. It doesn't get the pass. And so that was our running joke in the beginning that, you know, definitely Miles is a little extra particular about how he likes his things. I will say also that in the beginning, before we had a formal diagnosis and it was just me being, you know, aware of what was kind of happening in and around him, other people were supporting this habit. And so it was one of those things that just kept snowballing. And to this day, there's still a group of people, extended family, that continue to keep things in the exact same place as they are, so he can return back to exactly how things are every single time he visits.
So, and there is something sweet about that.
Yes.
There is something very sweet and very kind and heartwarming about family who understand that he needs things to be a particular way to feel comfortable. However, as a parent of one child who is not autistic, but does require things to be very particularly done, I do find it is important for them sometimes to be shoved out of their comfort zone and for you to say to them, life is not always pretty with a bow and in the same order. Sometimes the cart falls over and the stuff falls out.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes. And to continue to go about life, not necessarily worried about what's happening with the next step, but how can I contribute to make it what I want it to be?
Right.
And I think that is the mindset that I've continued to try to, you know, embed a little deeper, especially with my oldest, with all the children, and trying to help them better understand their surroundings. It's not about what's been given, but what you can give and what you can create based upon where you are. And so that type of mentality, that positive mentality, is what I want to keep echoing out over and over again to people who are in similar places. Maybe they can't, maybe I don't want to say can't, but not as appreciative of that spark of their child. Maybe that's a super annoying thing to you, but try to see that as such an amazing gift that they're so intentionally focused on detail that they're capable of doing that. That is a gift. Mm-hmm. Some people want to pay money for that. People want to pay surgeries for that. It's one of those situations where you have to kind of embrace those things and realize, okay, how can I make this equitable for my children as an example, but also how do I make this equitable as a life lesson for them to continue to grow and blossom based upon those foundations? So, yeah.
So I know your family is super diverse. Your kids come from various backgrounds. And I think that probably allows conversation about differences to happen more openly in your household than it might in the average family. My family, we don't have that wealth of diversity in it. I mean, there's a bit of diversity here and there, but by and large, we're all kind of the same. But how does it allow you to talk more openly as a family about the struggles that your eldest son has? Because I would imagine that your nephew who you adopted didn't grow up with neurodiversity potentially around him. And then he's coming into a family with a neurodiverse person. How do you keep an open line of communication? What is the conversation that happens around the dinner table about that?
Oh yeah. I think it always kind of comes from a place of curiosity. So I think that's the best thing about it. Miles has tons of questions. He wants to ask all the things. Lots of them are inappropriate sometimes. And it's one of those situations where we've built a tolerance, but in the beginning there wasn't one. And so it got to a point where it started to become almost vindictive because they're so close in age. They're going through the same things almost back to back. Miles more so less than his younger brother. So younger brother's kind of progressing in a lot of areas and older brother kind of is not as much. And so there's that kind of, you know, positive and negative charge there happening between the two of them in a lot of ways. And so we got to a point where it was so surmountable. I mean, you just couldn't ignore it. They were both kind of just going at it, because boys and teenagers and all the things. So they were just kind of verbally going at it. I always make this joke that, you know, these two talk to each other very well. They just talk different languages. Miles talks with his mouth and my second oldest son talks with his hands. And so it's one of those situations where it's like words and hands aren't going to mix very well. So we actually had to lay, you know, eventually some ground rules, things along those lines to kind of, this is the stop sign that you're not supposed to cross. And so that was kind of how we worded it. And that's how I still use it to this day with my oldest. So he better understands that I can make a joke about your shoes, but I can't make a joke about my brother's girlfriend. I can make a joke about something that happened on TV, but I can't make a joke about how that is a little bit more conflicted with, you know, racial inequity and things along those lines. There's certain areas that he is learning in his growth of social emotional learning that he realizes, okay, that's a no-fly zone. I'm learning a little harder. Don't say that. That would cause my brother to want to use.
So I think one of the things that I think is important to talk about, and I think you can speak about it uniquely, we've talked about it, I think, in education, where we see that there is a difference in the way in which we perceive, or we might perceive, whether we do it intentionally or unintentionally, that sometimes navigating the system when you have a marginalized child, whether there's a learning disability, whether they're autistic, whether whatever it is, that they can quickly be labeled. It can be thought that there isn't anything that can be done or they're not as capable. What are those obstacles? And how can families who are of mixed race or are of a minority group be able to advocate for their children in an effective way? I don't know if that question even makes sense.
In terms of this past year, especially in the era of COVID and in the era of Black Lives Matter, in the era of just celebrating recently Autism Awareness Month, like in all these spectrums, if you will, there's this level of seeing people for people. And I think that is one of the biggest advocating messages that I could give to someone who is maybe struggling with that. Of course, profiling will always exist in the world. It's never going to go away. And unfortunately, it's a part, in all honesty, a part of our human nature in areas to do that. But what I challenge you to do is kind of go against that grain and start seeing people for people. knowing that, yes, this child may have some sort of disability, may have some sort of area of spectrum that I may not completely embrace, but I need to make wiggle room to see him for himself without labeling it whatever it is that the world or society is telling us to do. I would love to give an example of my youngest, a second youngest, Ellington, who is my only Black child. And it's so interesting because through the way that he has gone through some of the public school systems, the way that he encourages learning on his level is different from other kids, different from the way that we typically learn in a classroom setting. And so he's definitely more hands-on learning. But as we progress through middle school right now, I'm noticing that he's very easily profiled as the kid who may or may not need extra help, or the kid who is assumptively doing something he's, you know, a behavioral issue in the class, and it goes to that direction. And there's just a lot of, I understand the reasoning why some of these educators go that direction. There's a level of profiling that we all have, right? But it's also appreciating the different types of diversity or different types of gifts in that child. Ellington is a buzzhead. So he loves talking. We did, like, and when he was two, we called him, you know, we did a politics party birthday for him. It was a presidential. We called it L for Two campaign because he is just a motor mouth. And unfortunately, he picked up his mother's skill of the gift of gab. And he definitely just loves talking. So he just naturally talks. And so as he's growing into his teenage years, he's becoming more and more of a social butterfly that we need to kind of like, put that, sit down, be quiet, shush. And so he's better learning now how to use his tone and his language a little bit better so that he can get his point across without sounding like, you know, he didn't understand the question, or he was belligerent, or, you know, being something that he didn't intend to be in that moment. So we're working a lot with language and tone and voice and things along those lines so he can continue to be that great oratory person he wants to be as he grows. But I want to apply that same logic and thinking to this spectrum, to how we see each other on spectrum or how we see others on spectrum. We can apply that same basic logic of, let's use these tools that you do have. Let's focus on how we can connect those things and how we can morph these things into something that would actually benefit them on a long-term basis or benefit them for a future purpose. And I think that's something that we forget to do as adults. We forget because we're so concerned with our own spheres. We forget how easy it is that these kids now in this technological age are often lost in their own spheres. And so my job in a lot of ways as mom is to put these spheres together, make one giant circle, and just kind of stare at each other and be like, okay, now what?
Yeah, it's true. And I think we've learned to begin to see people more. I don't think we're there yet. I really don't. I think we have a long way to go.
Yes.
But I would say, I think you're right. I think all the things that have happened needed to happen. It was going to happen anyway. But I think what happened was we found ourselves in a spot where we really couldn't do anything but reflect upon what change needed to happen. And that other things happened to push the balance, to create the need. And I think it's a lovely thing that has happened, but it does. I certainly have found myself in my educational role taking a minute and going, okay, I need to check myself for a minute here and see where I'm at. But the last 2 years have taught me that it's okay for me to say, okay, hold on a minute. I need to think, I need to reflect, and then I need to check my tone, right? I need to check the comment that is about to come out of my mouth. But that it's okay to take that minute and reflect and think before you make a decision or an assumption about someone or something.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what's so great about what you're saying is that we need to see the person before you see the other, because it's the person in front of you that actually is the thing that matters. You know, the whole person.
Yes, absolutely. It is definitely not like a 200-page book of this is my life. It's more of a, what can I do in this moment to best honor this person in front of me? And that takes a lot of guts to be able to say that to yourself. It takes a lot of guts to be able to say it to another person. You know, what could I do in this moment to best honor this person in front of me?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's respect and understanding, right?
Which yeah, absolutely.
Hands should down. Be given, should be given without question, in my opinion. But
yes. Here we are. Yes.
So you've, I'm sure if you're like most other parents, you know, you're looking for resources, you're looking for information. I mean, were there any things that you came across, whether it's about, you know, the blending of families when families can be very different, whether it's around sort of the race scenario in terms of mm-hmm. understanding how best to support that right. biases, are there some good resources out there that you think either educators, parents, whoever might be listening might want to take a look at to help understand kind of what it looks like?
Yeah, we've had a lot of different types of books that we've read on Amazon. There's webinars out there now that really kind of work with blended family lifestyles and multi-ethnic blended families specifically. So I think that's really important because we talk about how easy it is to have, you know, sometimes biracial children are, you know, the stopping point for that conversation. And it really isn't. Like, there's so much more that is can be done on a deeper level in honoring our children's heritages. Also really important that we honor parents' heritages. I think that's really important as well as we kind of dive a little deeper with the blended families. But just in general, a couple of different books that I absolutely loved on top of my head, there is The Miracle Family by Miriam Kosher, which I absolutely love her perspective and her personal life story and how she's raised her 6 children from across 4 countries. Wow. And that was really helpful in helping me want to appreciate life and help me appreciate the life that I have.
That's life lesson number one for everyone and anyone, right? For sure. 100%. That's a great one. So Danielle, I know you don't just do this. You do lots of interesting things. I follow you in all kinds of fun places. So where can people learn more about you? I mean, they've gotten a chance to listen to you for the last little bit, but if they want to mm-hmm. learn more about you, where can they find you?
They can definitely find me on the gram at Octane Designs with an S, or you can check out our website at lexoctane.com. I am a creative director of a 12-year-old digital marketing and branding firm based in the heart of the bluegrass.
Amazing. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for this conversation. This is really, really fun. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours on all sorts of things, but I appreciate you letting us into your family a little bit, helping us understand how you brought 2 different groups together and how you continue to grow your family. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are looking for help and support in creating a roadmap to success for your child through challenging times, contact me at access2education.com. I work with all families to help them build power and knowledge in understanding their child's needs and how to build success through advocacy. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at access2education Toronto. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so together we can create your roadmap to success.